everyone. This is Sean A. Barksdale of the 10 Minutes of Truth podcast. Today, we have a very, very esteemed guest, the Honorable Judge Joel Cunningham Sr., correct?
Correct.
How you doing, Judge?
I'm doing well, Sean. I hope you're doing well.
I'm great. I am great. Good to be on this side and not have to.
Well, you know, you've seen the other side.
Absolutely. Okay?
And I know your background.
Absolutely.
And I know what you've overcome.
Yes, sir.
And let me say, I'm mighty proud of you.
Thank you. Thank
for
you.
What you have done and what you are continuing to do, especially in this world of drug addiction and substance abuse disorders. So
Absolutely.
Welcome to the Halifax County Adult Recovery Court.
Yes. Yes. I have in my notes, which everyone will see in just a minute. I want to write that down, but recovery court, as I continue to say it. But this is adult drug treatment, or formerly known as drug court, recovery court. I want to start with this, Judge.
Okay.
You became the Halifax County, Virginia, so far, only African-American judge to preside over circuit court and Virginia's first circuit court judge west of Richmond. Huge milestones in the African-American community. So congratulations to that.
Thank you, sir.
With that said, your longtime friend and former Virginia Supreme Court Justice, Mr. John Charles Thomas, who was also the first in the position as an African-American Supreme Court Justice in VA, said about you in the ceremony of the hanging of your picture in the circuit court that you committed yourself to the vision expressed by Dr. Martin Luther King, which is that the arc of the moral universe is long, but bends towards justice. Your friend, Justice Thomas, added that what Dr. King did not include in that statement was that the arc does not bend by itself. It bends when good people of goodwill lean into the arc and push it. And that's exactly what the Cunninghams have done for this community. With that said, Judge, I'll just a brief background about you, because how long did you preside as judge?
If my recollection is correct, Sean, and the older I get, the less I trust my recollection. Let me make that clear. But I started in the General District Court in 1997, in which I served for 10 years. Then I was elected to the Halifax County Circuit Court, where I served for another 10 years. And I'm continuing to serve as the adult recovery court judge now in a retired status. And I'm enjoying every moment of this experience of trying to help people get into recovery, to help them save their lives, to restore relationships with their families. And this is probably the most important thing that I've ever done as a professional. Of all of my years in court, I now understand better than I've ever understood the significance of substances and how they impact the lives, not only of the individual who appeared before me, but their families and their communities. And the recovery court, my recovery court, and recovery courts around the nation are doing a phenomenal job in helping people get into recovery.
Yes, sir.
So in my view, and I think this view is shared by many in my line of work, that this program is the best criminal justice reform program that exists in this country. These courts work. They make a difference. They change the behavior of people. And I'm just proud of being a part of it. It just it makes me feel so great and wonderful in knowing that I and my team are playing a role in shaping behavior. reducing recidivism, getting people out of jail, good, decent human beings who really are not criminals, but who have a substance use disorder. That is the approach that we bring to drug court, to recovery court. I'll use those terms interchangeably. But that is the attitude we bring. We bring the attitude that you are suffering from an illness and that you need not be ashamed of it. That other people suffer from illnesses and are treated. Why can't we treat you? And why doesn't the system recognize you as being a person who is ill rather than imposing incarceration? That is what the criminal justice system is doing in Virginia. And I'm proud to be a part of that process, of that change in thinking. And that thinking was that let's just put them in jail. Maybe that'll do it. But we found out by trial and error and a repetitive process that that doesn't change behavior. You can't shout addiction out of a person. I can't order addiction out of a person. I can't jail it. That doesn't work. What does work is treatment, not incarceration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that being said, for our listeners that have never heard of recovery court, can you describe what recovery court is?
I'll do my best. Recovery court is a special program designed to show individuals that they have promise, that they are not going to have to be in the same predicament they've always been. So recovery court is unlike the regular court in the sense that we are specialized. We have the time to work with our folk. We have time to teach them and provide them the tools for recovery. So our court is a treatment court. And a lot of people come into drug court for the first time can't appreciate or don't understand that, and they're shocked to learn that we are not like the regular court. I mean, the regular court has a purpose.
They come in defensive already.
They come in defensive already. I mean, they come in right. And, you know, and the judges are great judges in the regular courts, in the regular, we call them dockets, in the regular dockets. But they don't have time to handhold. They don't have time to talk with them about all of the things necessary to get them into recovery. They don't have the time. But drug courts do. We have time to work with individuals who bring unique experiences, who have different traumas in their life. And we tailor our programs and our activities and our treatment approaches to that individual. We are comprised of many people. You saw our program this morning, I think some of you were here. We have a multidisciplinary team. So we have people from mental health. We have people from law enforcement. We have the Commonwealth attorney. We have a peer group representative here. And we meet every Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock to talk about how we can change lives. That doesn't happen in regular court. It can only happen in a court designed or set up for this treatment approach as opposed to just thinking about incarceration as a key or as the answer.
Absolutely.
To deal with the problem.
Absolutely. What are the requirements to be able to enter recovery court?
Unfortunately, the first requirement is, and I wish didn't It didn't have to be a requirement. And it is, you got to have a jail sentence over here.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay.
So drug court or recovery court is only for the individual who has appeared before the regular court's docket, who has been charged with a criminal offense, and he is eligible for recovery court based on the Virginia Code. The Virginia Code specifies who is eligible to participate in this voluntary recovery court program. And you can't be have a violent crime background. And you have to be a person who really is addicted to substances. Mm. We refer to our eligible candidates as being high risk, high needs people, high risk of reoffending. Mm. And those are the people who are eligible for our program.
Okay. How many times can a person go through the program?
There's no limit on the number of times that a person can try. We have not been confronted with a request, however, from an individual who did not make it the first time around and who requested a second attempt. I'm sure if we are confronted with that, we would not automatically reject that person's wish, but we'll have to evaluate and see if that person really is serious about changing her life or his life. Mm-hmm. You know, recovery is not a straight line. And you know that.
Absolutely.
It's not a straight line. Relapse is very much a part of the disease of having a substance use disorder. We understand that. So we don't automatically reject or declare that a person is not eligible for our program, or we don't put a person out of our program because he has tested positive for a substance that is drug related, a drug, illicit drug. We don't, because we understand that for some it takes numerous times.
It does.
To fall off the proverbial wagon, so to speak, and to get back on, because we understand the nature of addiction.
Mm. Your Honor, I had the pleasure of sitting in here today seeing how drug court works for our community, and we put this information out for free in our community. A lot of people don't know, because I didn't know how recovery court works. Mm-hmm. Can you explain typically how drug court works? Because that young lady that you had sitting right there, she's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And so can you explain to the audience how recovery court works?
Let me see if I can give them a visual of how it works. Okay. First of all, they have to be recommended by someone in the criminal justice system. Mm. Okay. That recommendation can come from the circuit court judge who is sitting in the regular court. He may have a person before him whom he thinks is a good candidate for the program. Well, he makes that recommendation known. He is evaluated by the drug court team, Frida Holiday, and we have a person from mental health here, the CSB, who evaluate that person. After they get the recommendation from the circuit court, then the evaluation takes place to see if that person is what we call a high risk, high need person. If he meets that definition based upon specified testing, special testing, then that person is allowed to come into our program. And when she comes in, we explain the rigorous nature of the program. The program is not an easy program. A person who is in our program has to do something almost every day. It is hard. That person is tested randomly several times a week. He has to appear in the drug court office several times a week. He has to go to groups and community meetings several times a week, several times per week. They have to call in every day at a specified time. And once they become stabilized, they have to work. And plus, they got to come to court weekly. And not just coming any time. They have to be on time for everything, the call-ins, everything. It is a tough program. But those people who really want to change their lives, who want to get away from the difficulty of addiction, it's hard being addicted. You have to get up every day and figure out how you're going to get drugs, how you're going to pay for it. You get tired of the lying and the stealing. And so many people who come into our program finally say to themselves, just like Larry Berkeley, whom you interviewed, they've just gotten to the point, and the phrase they use is, they are sick and tired, of being sick and tired.
That is it.
So that's it. And once they stay in the program and go through the five stages of drug court, and they have to certainly accomplish and meet certain milestones at each stage. They meet that milestone and the requirements to go to the next level. They go to level two. There are certain specific guidelines for that. They meet level three, same thing, four. And then when they complete five, they're then eligible to graduate from our recovery program. Mm. And as I said, it's for some, it's easier than it is for others. Some come in right from the outset, following the policies of our program to the T. But others, it takes a while to flip the switch. The light switch doesn't come on for others. But we don't give up. We do all we can to get them to understand that they deserve a better life. And so that's kind of a sense of what the program is all about. Hope
yes,
that kind of gives you a better sense.
Absolutely. Of it. And what we'll do next is just a minute. Thank you for the explanation, Judge. I'm a peer recovery specialist.
Okay.
And that's my give back. Mm-hmm. You know, this is I understand what this give back is mm-hmm. in the community. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do now is kind of break down what the judge went over, because this program has 10 key components, and it's an evidence-based program.
It's an evidence-based program, and we have standards. We have what we call mm-hmm. best practice standards.
That's right.
And they're sort of like the Bible of recovery reports, of recovery courts. These are standards that have been developed over the years, you know, with data that shows what works and what does not work. And they're being refined all the time. So when we get to a critical question about how to treat a person, then we have to remember what the standards say.
Right, absolutely. So like, because for instance, number one is target population and historically discriminated against groups. So from what I heard, that has to come, like you said, that target audience is the individual that is nominated, so to speak, from someone else. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and then you have the roles and responsibilities of a judge.
Right.
So what are the roles and your roles and responsibilities?
Okay. My main role is to encourage and to motivate and to do all I can to assure people that they're okay, that they have nothing to be ashamed of, and that the stigma that's usually associated with people who are using substances is really not a stigma, and they ought not view it as a stigma. They ought to view it as a disease, as I've indicated before, that can be treated. So my mission is to give folk confidence and hope that they can change their lives, that they can change their behavior. Much of the hard work, frankly, is done by my team. But my job is to show empathy. That is my job. Is to show compassion.
I witnessed it today.
And empathy and compassion are the most important things that I can do as a judge to change behavior. The most important things that I can do to change behavior. And I can do that because it's real for me. Hmm. You know, I know what it's like to
have
been.
Where did you get your vision from?
Pardon?
Where did you get your vision from for Recovery Court?
My vision came from my experience in regular court, as a regular court judge. Hmm. And that is, there was a time, Sean, I'm going to say, and I've chosen the year around 2012, when young people, mostly young people, middle-aged people every now and then, but mostly young people were coming to my court who were charged with drug-related offenses. So it was around 2012 that I took notice. And each court's day thereafter, it seemed, that there were more and more people coming. These bright, promising young people dressed up in orange jumpsuits. And my conscience began to bother me. I began to say, what a waste of talent. What a waste of lives to incarcerate people who are not really violent and to put them in jail with people who are dangerous in our society. And to mix them all up, it seemed to me that was something that we ought not do. And so before I retired in 2016, I decided that I wanted to try Recovery Court as a way to save the lives of young people in this community who were dying in great numbers and who still are from overdosing with drugs like methamphetamine, fentanyl primarily. These are really dangerous drugs. And so I think it was a combination of sending these folk off to jail without treatment, without counseling, only to come back on the street with the tolerance levels very low, and then to go get some illegal substances that kills them. So all of these factors, I think, caused me to want to change and to do more treating instead of more incarcerating. Mm.
Incentivism, sanctions, and therapeutic adjustments as well, complementary treatment, social services, and drug and alcohol testing. I witnessed today the way Recovery Court works, and you said earlier that it's not a one-strike deal. If someone fails a drug, because that was one of my questions, well, what happens if someone fails a drug test? So what does the process say if someone relapses?
Okay. We have treatment professionals here who make recommendations to the court about how we should change the treatment. And I use their recommendations to a large extent on deciding what treatment approach that I will order. And we have myriad ways to treat, okay? Certainly we have counseling. We have group therapy, that I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
And we have residential placement programs that we can send our folk to when we think they need 60 or 90 days of intense counseling and treatment. So those are the options that we have. But it's all about you're trying to get the right approach for that person. And as I said, we use very heavily what our folk recommend, what my people recommend to me about deciding the appropriate treatment.
I saw this amazing team that you have around you. Talk about your team.
I have a wonderful team. They're absolutely wonderful. They are so dedicated in trying to help our participants get into recovery. You know, we have the Commonwealth Attorney, the Chief Prosecutor in Virginia. We have Tracy Martin. We have Elizabeth Hurt, Public Defender. We have representatives from the peer group side of things, Charlotte Hightower. We have Preston Whitlow, who is from mental health. We have a deputy sheriff representative, and we have the chief of police, as you saw today, who was here.
Correct.
So all of these team members are great, and they're dedicated to helping. You know, everybody is not suited for this kind of work. You really have to be able to empathize. And our participants know when it's real, and they know when it's not real. So my team is comprised of those very empathetic people and dedicated people who want to help others change their lives. And that's what it takes. It takes a group effort, bringing everybody to bring his or her experience in this process of motivating and helping folk to change their lives. So we have an excellent team. I'm very proud of my team.
Absolutely. And I know for myself, a lot of times when you feel like somebody, like you said, you know, when you've been in the trenches, you know what's real and what's fake. Right. And when you can feel and know that someone cares, it helps you care about yourself. And that's what I saw. You know, that young lady, Caitlin, you know, the way she sat in front of us, and you could see the vibrance from her. And you know, the way you spoke to them about not being ashamed of the disease.
Right.
You know, my father. You know, my father, Calvin Barksdale Whale.
Absolutely.
And my father has suffered from substance disorder all his life.
Right.
All his life. So I appreciate that empathy, because someone had to have empathy with me.
Right.
You know, moving forward.
Absolutely.
What is in place for individuals upon graduation?
Well, upon graduation, we try to follow them. Okay. We try to do all we can to make sure that they remain in recovery. We don't have a formal recovery program at this point, but I'm thinking that this is something that we're gonna work towards. But I'm happy to say that I'm confident to say that 69% of our people graduate and remain in recovery. I mean, that's a phenomenal percentage.
Very much.
And what we are trying to do to up that percentage is to establish recovery housing. You mentioned that that's one of the things you want to talk about. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Please, that was next.
Okay. Recovery housing means that when a person leaves this program, or when a person is in this program,
okay,
if she or he, if they don't have anywhere to stay that's safe, that's drug-free, then they can go to recovery housing where the environment is wholesome, where they are surrounded by people who share the same goals and hopes, where they are not going back to the community from which they came, where the friends, relatives are using drugs. Mm. It is hard to keep a person recovering. When they come to drug court, we kind of get them inspired. They start showing signs of progress.
Yes, sir.
But then have to go back to the same community where drugs are being used on a daily basis. It is asking a whole lot of that person. It is asking a lot of strength and dedication to stay away from drugs when it's just around them everywhere. Mm. When you got a friend, oh, come on, man, you can do this. That's all right. One time won't hurt you. So the purpose of recovery housing is to get them in a safe, wholesome environment.
Yes.
I am part of a group. Actually, I'm chairing a group, a statewide group, to build recovery housing in this community and in Newport News. And they're going to serve as pilot programs.
Wow.
So we are well on our way. As I indicated, we have a great group of people across the state of Virginia, great representatives from various departments of Virginia, who want to help Southside Virginia, or Southern Virginia, and other areas of Virginia, provide a decent and safe housing for folks. So that's well on its way. Mm. We are very excited about it. We are hopeful. And we really feel that it's going to happen.
I pray that it does in that manner, because I have to say this about environment, what you're talking about, the changing of environment.
Mm-hmm.
While I was incarcerated, my daughter, which I proudly talk about, my oldest daughter, just graduated VCU.
Congratulations.
Bachelor's degree.
Wonderful.
And went back and is graduated with her dentistry.
Wonderful.
Went and did her white coat 2 weeks ago. And I proudly say that, Your Honor, because she was in that environment that you talked about. Everyone's using drugs. She's 7 years old, failing out of school. And my mother.
She was how old?
She was 7 years old.
7 years old.
7 years old in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm incarcerated.
All right.
And her mother's still, right now, she hasn't seen her mother in 3 years, Your Honor. Going to see her for the first time today. Her mother's still substance disorder, like my father. However, my mother and my stepfather stepped in and adopted my daughter.
Wonderful. Right.
And because of that environment change, it changed her life. So sometimes it's the environment that you're in that has a grip on you. So understanding what you're trying to do as far as that housing is direly important, changing that environment. I'm not going to hold too much more of your time, Your Honor. I want to say, as a returning citizen, 17 years clean, myself, my job is, I have a vigorous job of changing that mindset. I go back into the prison systems now to help change that mindset. As we showed today, we collaborate and we partner with companies, and I hope that we can further this collaboration as well moving forward with any way that we can help. Is there anything that you would like to leave the community with?
I would like to leave the community with the notion that drug addiction is rampant. We're losing a lot of people. I would like them to understand and appreciate that if we're going to make a change in this community, or in communities nationwide, it has to be a collaborative effort on the part of all of us. The court system, treatment agencies, regular citizens of the community, you name it, every segment of our community, all of us have to be involved in stemming the tide of addiction. And I want them to understand that it is such a dreadful disease that once people are truly addicted, and it takes time for a person to get addicted, your brain does everything, your body does everything it can to tell you this is not good for you. Mm-hmm. Yet we keep pushing our brains to the point that we physically change our brains. We have addicted brains now. You know, it's kind of like the example I give sometime. If I'm running too long, y'all let me know. If you want, I use this analogy. Can you imagine the nicest, greenest cucumber that you've ever picked off the vine? So nice and fresh. But if you submerge that cucumber in vinegar or alcohol or some formaldehyde, whatever you want to use, it becomes a pickled cucumber. And once the cucumber is pickled, it can never go back to that fresh green cucumber that you picked off the vine. My point is that once the brain has been subjected to these chemicals over a period of time, it is forever changed, unfortunately. So I want our community to have a better understanding of the nature of the disease, and that we should all do all we can to understand that it really is a disease, and don't shun people. Don't stigmatize people because they have drug disorders.
Absolutely.
Treat them as any other deserving person who has a medical problem and who needs medical treatment. And open your doors to them. You'll make the community more acceptable to treatment and doing things designed to get folk in a better shape than what they are. Get them working. Get them back to the families. You know, I just can't imagine what it's like for a parent to have to worry each day about whether my child is living, whether he's dead, where is he? Is he okay? And we can make that change in our communities and nationwide if we recognize that it's a treatable disease and use the best effort that we can to make it happen. But it's going to take a team. It's going to take the entire community. Drug court cannot do it by itself. Even though drug court has been, in my view, highly successful, we only work with people who have been charged with crimes. But what about the vast majority of people who are not? We lose this. The University of Michigan has the largest football stadium in the country. Can you imagine from a Goodyear blimp looking down on a University of Michigan football game, full? That is the number of people we are losing a year from opioid addiction or drugs, two-thirds of which are opioid, fentanyl. We lose a jumbo jet of people every day. One person dies every 7 minutes. So I want the community to understand the magnitude of the problem and bring the appropriate attention, level of understanding that it's going to take to adequately deal with the deaths of our children and our people in our community. And not the least of which, we need to worry about the cost that it's costing us. It costs us a lot of money to incarcerate, to treat people at the hospitals, loss of productivity. All of these things combined are very, very costly. That's what I want to leave this community with. But with the good news of knowing that people can be restored, they can live productive lives. And not to give up on them.
Judge Cunningham, this has been a pleasure to be able to sit with you, to be able to sit in your court today and to see how recovery court works and to know that it is working. And everything that you guys heard, it actually does work, because as I was doing my research, I contacted another lawyer. I said, well, what do you know about drug court? Do you know anything about drug court? And they said, I know that it's working.
That's good. That's good to hear.
So thank you.
My pleasure, Sean.
Thank you,
Sean.
Kindly.
Congratulations for your work.
Thank you.
And all that you're doing.
Thank you.
To help our community
thank
as well.
Thank you.
Really
appreciate everyone,
it.
This is Sean A. Barksdale, and this has been 10 Minutes of Truth. Thank you.
You're welcome.